Turning to Books as We Shelter in Place. Have you found yourself with lots of extra time at home while you shelter in place? What have you done with it? Cleaned out some cupboards, organized the basement? Or have you snuggled up on the couch with a good book? Or a whole bunch of good books? Today we are talking books, and we want to hear if you've looked to escape the stress and uncertainty of a global pandemic by cracking open a new novel, memoir, or book of poetry. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we just happen to have the authors of a new novel, new memoir, and new book of poetry on the program. Lily King, Wes McNair, and Phuc Tran are my guests, and we want to hear what you've been reading. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today we have three Maine writers joining us to talk about their new works and to talk about what they've been reading or hoping to read. And we would love to hear about books you recommend during this extraordinary time. Lily King is here. She's the author of 5 award-winning novels. Her new novel, Writers and Lovers, is a New York Times bestseller and was the New York Times Book Club pick for March. Wes McNair has written 20 books. He was Maine's Poet Laureate, and his most recent book is a book-length poem called Dwellers in the House of the Lord. And Phuc Tran is with us. His memoir, Sigh Gone, came out a few weeks ago and has already received rave reviews and a lot of national attention. Lily, Wes, and Phuc, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, we want to hear from you in the audience. What are you reading during these surreal times? Are you turning to the classics, or is this time to read some Stephen King novels? We'd love to hear from you. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. First, congratulations to all three of you. What wonderful reviews and coverage of your new books. And Lily, I'll start with you. I think so many people were waiting eagerly for your newest book, especially after the huge success of your novel Euphoria. But I understand it wasn't so easy for you to just spit out a new novel and to live up to that. So tell me the story of how this novel, Writers and Lovers, finally got on the page.
I know. It has been 6 years between books. I had this idea after Euphoria that I would just keep going, you know, with this idea of researching books and, doing things that are very impersonal, very far from my experience. I really enjoyed that, sort of taking a real life moment and fictionalizing it and all the research that was involved and all the kind of imagination and play that I got to do. And so I started in another one and I wrote about 20 pages and it did not work. And then I started in on another, I did another 4 months of research or something. And then that was going quite well. And then my mom died and very, very suddenly, completely out of the blue. And I stopped writing for about 7 or 8 months. I just wrote in my journal and I could never even go back to that novel. I couldn't even open the black notebook that I had written it in. And this is the book that came out. And I think I needed a place for my emotions, losing my mom. And I think it was a time that made me feel very vulnerable and sort of harkened back and resonated and resurrected almost a time in my life when I felt even more vulnerable and anxious and scared, you know, the time in my life when I was in my late 20s and early 30s trying to become a writer. And so I really pulled from my emotions of that time to write this book about this 31-year-old trying to write a novel and completely broke and in despair in a lot of ways.
So of your 5 novels, for you, this one is the most personal.
I can't say that because I do feel like I also pulled from a lot of my emotional experiences with Father of the Rain. But it's certainly the one that lines up the most in my, you know, if you look at my autobiography and you look at that novel, you know, people would say, oh, well, it's an autobiographical novel. I don't really see it that way, because I had to make up all the characters, all the dialogue, all the scenes, kind of like Faulkner says, you know, facts are not the truth. And I had to create, you know, you with a novel, you really try to create a truthful story. And you can't really do that with bits and pieces when you're trying to create something fresh and not write a memoir.
Wes, your book is a long, epic poem, and I understand your sister was the catalyst for it. Tell me about her and why you needed to write this book.
Well, my sister, always a dear person to me, recently was afflicted with Pick's disease, which is a rare, fast-moving sort of dementia that tends to strike younger people. She was in her 50s when she was afflicted. And so I went through this heartbreaking process, really, of watching her gradually disappear before my eyes into her forgetting. And I felt this intense need to preserve her in a poem as she was, as I knew her to be. Amy had a lot of trouble in her life, beginning with the trouble that my mother caused for her, not her fault, but then she fell into this difficult marriage with my brother-in-law, Mike, who was the owner of a gun shop in rural Virginia, and full of anger. He was a Trump supporter, by the way. And yet, I call my sister a soldier in this poem, because she had this astonishing capacity for hope, for lifting herself up after her conflicts, and reaching out once again for a loving connection, which is how she brought this wonderful reconciliation in the end to her family and to her marriage. So I wanted to write this book which is a long poem. I wanted to write it to pay tribute to every last twist and turn of this reconciliation that she was able to bring to her family, and I also wrote it to pay tribute to her loving spirit. But I also wrote the poem to tell another story, a second story, which is in the book. Both of these stories, by the way, began as worries. They would get me up in the middle of the night back in 2016 and 2017, and I would mull them, trying to get to the bottom of them. And the second story has to do with Donald Trump's rise to power in the White House during his campaign of 2016, which is not a story of love, but of fear. In fact, it seems to me that Donald Trump thinks that love is a weakness. And he thinks of fear, as he told as he told an interviewer in the White House, he thinks of fear as his most important political weapon. And of course, to have fear, you have to create conflict of one kind or another that will scare people and make them angry. Reconciliation is the last thing you want, because when people come together in that way, fear tends to disappear. So I thought, if I could tell my sister's story, this small, intimate family story, truly and honestly, about all the ways that love and hope are tested and found right on the ground, and if I could intersect that story, juxtapose it with a big, national, angry, fear-baiting Trump story, I could not only honor my sister, but I could help people to think about politics in this fraught time in a different way, in a deeper way, which is poetry's way.
You know, Wes, I'm thinking you say things like the worries that kept you up in the middle of the night, and love and hope and coming together. There's no way when you were writing this poem you could have seen what was on the horizon.
There isn't any way I could have seen it, but you know. And we all know it's a dark moment. The latest news telling us more bad things, more bad results from the spread of the coronavirus in Maine. And yet, I have to say, I also see a thread of hope. in it in this dark period, because for the past 3+ years there'd been a lot of fear in the country on the political right and the political left, and there's been a lot of division, as we know. But this new fear of the virus, you know, this deeper fear, has brought forth, I think, a growing realization that we can't make things better all by ourselves, that we need each other, we need a shared sacrifice and collaboration. The virus has brought us together in this way, and I don't think we're going to lose this spirit of togetherness after it's gone.
I want to turn you to Fook Tran. Yes, thank you, Wes. Fook, there's a bit of a theme here. We're talking about family. Your memoir is all about family, but I understand you didn't set out to write a memoir, that this started as a TED Talk that someone recruited you for.
Yeah, that's right. In 2012, I gave a TEDx talk here in Maine, and I was nominated to give that talk, and I might as well just kind of go for it and speak publicly about my experience. I really didn't, plan, have any sort of thoughts about what would happen after that. And then after I gave the talk, it attracted some attention from National Public Radio. And but more than that, I think like the reception just on a individual basis was just so overwhelming that I thought, maybe I'll, write a memoir, or maybe people are interested in hearing my story at some point. You know, I was thinking maybe like when I was like retired and in my 80s or something like that. And then I started doing live storytelling after that. And then in 2016, a literary agent approached me and asked me if I was interested in writing memoir. I have a hard time saying no to anything, especially if it sounds hard and crazy. I'm more likely to say yes to that. And I just thought, oh, sure, why not try to write a memoir? So that was 4 years ago. And then the book came out last week.
Why not try to write a memoir at the same time that you're balancing a full-time job as a Latin teacher, a business, a tattoo business, and have two small kids, I must add, to make it that much harder.
What could possibly go wrong, right? That sounds
perfect. You know, but your story is so wonderful and hard, and Wes was talking about this before the show, funny at the same time. You write about being an immigrant kid, but also feeling like an outcast in many different ways. And do you think, well, let me just turn it around and say, Fook, this is a debut, and it's only been out a couple weeks, and you've received incredible praise and attention for it. What do you think in your story resonates with so many people?
Thanks. I really appreciate your saying that. I think my primary hope for any reader is to recognize the complexity of my story. I really wanted to sort of lay it all out there, warts and all, and I hope that sort of baked into that is an invitation for people to reflect upon their own, complexity. I think we live in an age now where we sort of have this unyielding demand for people to be consistent and be the same and say the same thing all the time, right? And it feels really rigid, right? That we can sort of distill or boil people down into 140 characters on the internet or whatever. And I really want to reject that. I think we're complicated people. I'm complicated, and we all are, and why not revel in that, right? And instead of calling someone a hypocrite, like, why not just say, oh, that seems really, you seem really complex. I think about Walt Whitman's Song of Myself, right? He says, do I contradict myself, right? So then I contradict myself, right? We all contain multitudes, and that was really one of the driving forces in my writing the book.
Jennifer, wow. you invited us to jump in, so I don't want to lose track of the fact that Fook and I are on the same subject in a way. I mean, I have been reading his book, as I said earlier, and loving it. And there are immigrants in my book too, but they're not villains in a made-for-TV drama intended to scare people. We know that that theme too well today. But these are real-life refugees from my own family who probably resemble the immigrants in the family of your listeners, people like Fouque, for that matter, who deserve to be valued and understood for their for their struggle, which is down underneath the humor in Fouque's book, but definitely there. And these struggles didn't always turn out right. I mean, my stepfather came from Quebec, Canada, as a French speaker in a large French-speaking family. This was in New Hampshire. He was the oldest kid in the family, and he loved flowers, and he had a particular kind of American dream. He wanted to start a florist and nursery business, and he was able to do that after years and years of hardship. And then came along the Kmart up the road with its lawn and guard center, and it tore his business apart. So he ended his life going back to the same machine shop where his father landed when the family first came to the United States. So there was a great disenchantment for him. Or I think of my brother-in-law Mike's father, who came from Poland, and he wanted to get a college degree and teach school. But after he got his degree, which was a great struggle for him because he didn't have the language when he came here. But after that happened, he couldn't get a job because he was Polish and a Catholic. But this book isn't only about those first generation immigrants, because it tells the story of the unfolding American dream in my family. The dream passed on with the disenchantment to each new generation, and each generation trying to get it right. And it gave me special pleasure to fit the generations together in this book, as I did, because I thought I was finally setting the story straight in spite of the president's mischaracterizations.
It gives me great pleasure to see many of you are calling in with your recommendations for books to read during this pandemic, this sheltering in place. We have about a minute before we need to go to a break, so I'm going to ask each of you what you would recommend. What have you read recently that you're just so excited about and want to share with others? I'll start with you, Lily King.
I just finished a collection. I'm due to hand in a collection of short stories soon, and so I've been reading a lot of short stories, and I just finished The Other Language by Francesca Marciano. And I loved it so much. And she has a new book coming out in June that I'm also really excited about.
All right, your turn, Fouque.
I read Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. And I read it too fast. I loved it so much that I couldn't put it down. And then when it was over, I was so upset that I'd read it in 2 days.
And what about you, Wes?
Well, I've been reading the poetry of Emily Dickinson, who continually wrote about this experience of walking in the dark. Many poems on that theme, always an existential dark, and it reminds me a bit of the dark that we're going through right now. Actually, I have this poem by heart, so I love seeing it in text, and I love saying it to myself, and so I have the last two stanzas by heart, as a matter of fact. So let me just say them, because I think everybody will see the connection between this poem and our own darkness right now. So here are the last two stanzas. The bravest grope a little, and sometimes hit a tree directly in the forehead. But as they learn to see, either the darkness alters, or something in the sight adjusts itself to midnight, and life steps almost straight. We may not walk in the straight way we're accustomed to, and in some way, metaphorically, this it might be so, but yet the chances are, because Emily Dickinson implies this, chances are, by God, we'll still be walking, because we are persistent, hopeful souls.
Well, thank you so much for that, Wesley McNair. We are talking with Wes McNair, Fouque Tran, and Lily King, all Maine authors, all with new, highly acclaimed books out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'd like to hear what you are recommending. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Senior Guide, an online resource of services and information for older Mainers and their families. More at maineseniorguide.com. And Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement living campus proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow on Maine Public Classical.
On Maine Public Classical's next Symphony Sunday broadcast, Jeffrey Kahane and the Portland Symphony Orchestra are teaming up to bring you the music of two of the most beloved composers of all time. Tune in to hear Kahane conduct the PSO in Mozart's Prague Symphony and the elegy from Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Strings. You'll also hear Kahane as the soloist in Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 17. It's all happening May 3rd at 3 on Maine Public Classical's Symphony Sunday.
And that's this Sunday at 3 over on Maine Public Classical. Giving Tuesday Now is happening this coming Tuesday, May 5th. This global day of giving aims to support nonprofits during the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope you will count Maine Public among the organizations you support. During these challenging times, public radio is more important than ever, and it is critical that Maine Public remain adequately funded so we can continue to keep you and your neighbors informed. All donations made to Maine Public today will be matched. You can make a donation anytime at mainepublic.org, and thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, three Maine writers are with me to talk about their new books and to share what they've been reading. Lily King's new book is Writers and Lovers. Wes McNair's book is Dwellers in the House of the Lord. And Fook Tran's memoir is Saigon. That's S-I-G-H and the word gone. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We already have so many recommendations coming in. We'll try to put these all together and put them on our webpage at the end of the program. But Sharon on Facebook, listen to Ann Patchett's Dutch House, narrated by Tom Hanks. Perfect while doing quarantine projects. Hildy on Facebook, I recently enjoyed two books by Matt Haig, How to Stop Time and the Humans. Short chapters, good storytelling, easy to get into, and very clever. And Taylor on Facebook, I'm diving back into Jim Nichols' book, Closer All the Time, in anticipation for his new book, Blue Summer, that's coming out in August from Maine Island publisher Islandport Press. And I can second that recommendation, Jim Nichols' book, Closer All the Time. Joining us now, Stu Kestenbaum, the author of five collections of poems, the most recent being How to Start Over. He's currently Maine's Poet Laureate, former director of the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, and he also hosts Poems From Here, which you hear on Maine Public Radio. Hi, Stu. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I am great. I understand that you're a Wes McNair fan. What draws you to his poetry?
What draws me to Wes's poetry is that he can speak in a voice of northern New England and of Maine in a way that treats everybody with great dignity, even with whatever shortcomings they might have. He's able to honor their voices in a way that sets his work apart.
Tell us a little about your most recent collection, How to Start Over.
A lot of it is based on poems words that I ask people to give me at random, from artists to scientists to family members. And I made a rule for myself that I had to write poems with using those words. So generally 10 to 14 words would be in the poem. So it gave me a way to kind of step outside myself as a writer and step into myself as a writer in a different way.
I know you're always reading a lot of different Maine poets because you curate our Poems From Here program and read them. And that is every Friday, so after today's program. But I want to ask you just generally, what are you reading now during this shelter in place? It doesn't have to be poetry you recommend. What do you find yourself turning to right now?
Well, I just read We the People by Jill Lepore, which gave me a sense of our chaotic country going back to its beginnings. And in a way is reassuring to realize that however chaotic we are now, we have had periods when we were as chaotic in the past, and maybe some pessimism in that sense, but also some hope that we can find ways through things.
Well, Stu, thanks so much for calling in. That's Stuart Kestenbaum. He is Maine's Poet Laureate. His newest collection of poems is How to Start Over. And you'll hear Stu's voice again at the end of today's program because he's the host of Poems From Here. I'm going to move on to Ari Gerson, who's calling from Longfellow Books. Hi, Ari. Thanks for joining us. So tell us how Longfellow Books is operating these days and what kind of books people want to read.
How are we operating? We're operating. we quickly turn into a mail order business, but it has been very impressive to see how the staff has responded, and it's been very meaningful, I think, to be able to provide what I think is, I'm not going to get into legal terms, but I think is an essential service right now, which is books, to the best of our capabilities. So, we've made the decision to hold back a little bit on curbside pickup just to sort of see how things go. But we're staying positive. And I think on some level, this experience of the past month has reminded people that that you don't have to necessarily order from the big giant. You can get books shipped to your house from your local bookstore. And I know a lot of the local indies are working really hard.
Ari, what kind of trends are you seeing? What do people want to read right now?
You've got the big three on your panel, and by the way, hey everybody.
Hey,
hi, Ari.
It's nice to hear your voices.
Nice to hear yours.
So it's great to hear you guys. Lily West and Vuk's books are obviously the top of the list. Dutch House and Patchett, the new Eric Larson, The Splendid and the Vile. That's been a big one. We actually have some signed copies of that. But the new Stephen King novella collection, If It Bleeds, has been very, very popular. But we're seeing a lot of just random, I think people are browsing on the website, and I think people are finding books that they may not have, we might not have had in stock, and they wouldn't have ever found it, but they're finding it on the website, and we're shipping out books or ordering books and shipping them that really we haven't in a long time. So it's actually a very interesting time, and in 4 months it'll be very curious to see what actually was sold, because I think people are going for a lot of different trends. I can't say, I've been on the show. Sometimes I say people just want feel good novels. People just want political, whatever. I think right now, I think some people want to buy A Wrinkle in Time to share with their kid who's home all day. I think some people are, I think there's just a bunch of stuff going on in the way people connect with books. I think it'll be very interesting in 4 months, or hopefully not 4 months, but to see what people have been looking for, because it's really running the gamut.
Sure, Ari. Thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. And Wes and Fook and Lily, I think this is so interesting, this idea that different people are responding to this in different ways. I'm looking at an article right now talking about how apocalyptic fiction is doing better than it ever has, whereas other people are probably cringing and thinking, the last thing I want to do is read Stephen King's The Stand, or our producer Jonathan has picked up The Plague again, So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this.
I do think people want, you know, there's some impulse knowing that it's sort of indefinite how long we're going to be inside to kind of read the book that you always have been meaning to read. For me, it's actually Crime and Punishment. And I was reminded of that when I started reading Fuchs' beautiful book. His second chapter is Crime and Punishment. Every chapter is named after a work of literature, and it's kind of brilliant the way he weaves that in there. But I was reminded, oh yeah, Crime and Punishment on my list. So I think
you're like that. Lily, where you're like, I need a real pick me up. I'm gonna read Crime and Punishment.
This book is really bringing me down. I got to read Crime.
Oh my goodness! I'm gonna go to Jeff Curtis, who's calling. Jeff, another bookstore, Sherman's Bookstores in Booth Bay Harbor. Jeff, thanks for calling in. And why don't you tell me what your readers are reading, what your customers are reading?
Well, Jennifer, I've been very impressed.
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I was very impressed that the orders that are coming in for the new books that have been published just in the last 3 weeks since people started staying home. These are books that would have gone right on our new release tables, and people are finding them on the website. It's very impressive. But probably Ari already mentioned one main or Stephen King, but one of the most popular books we've been filling orders for is by another Mainer, or at least a part-time Mainer, Jennifer Finney Boylan, her memoir, Good Boy, My Life in Seven Dogs.
That's wonderful. Well, Jeff, thanks for calling in. And really quickly, what is Sherman's doing? Are you doing curbside? Are you doing sending books by mail?
When we were required to close down, I took the stay-at-home order very seriously and sent all my staff home. So I volunteered to fill the website orders, thinking, how hard can it be? I haven't done it in about 5 years. And it's been a really quick, steep learning curve, but I'm doing it. And it's about, on our site, Sherman sells more than just books, and probably 50-50 books and jigsaw puzzles have been going out the door. Over website orders.
I betcha. Yeah, Jeff, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to try to squeeze in another call before we go to a break. Carrie in Winthrop, thanks for waiting. What do you want to recommend?
I'm going to plug some more main authors. I'm currently reading my comfort book, Rundle by Kenneth Roberts. And then I'm going to recommend a book called Above the Gravel Bar. And that's by David Cook, a main author. And then on my bucket list of book reading is August Gale by Barbara Walsh.
Great. Well, wonderful. And I'm going to repeat those because your phone was kind of breaking up a little bit. Rundle by Kenneth Roberts, August Gale by Barbara Walsh, and what by David Cook?
Above the Gravel Bar. It's about the Native American canoe routes of Maine. Wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carrie, so much for your call. Some more on Joe on Facebook writes, just started City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert. I already love it. Deborah says, just finished Becoming by Michelle Obama. So good. Marguerite on Facebook, Barbara Kingsolver, Animal Vegetable Miracle, A Year of Food Life. Very appropriate during this pandemic. Before we go to a break, do any of you have anything to say about any of the books I just shouted out? Do you know these books?
I would just love to.
That was Lily's book, but Lily gave me a good idea to start reading Russian novelists. So maybe that would be my project up ahead.
Fook?
I would just want to say that there's no, you know, right or wrong book. You know, I think if there's any time for us to just stop wringing our hands and indulge and take care of ourselves, yeah, this is the time. There's no right or wrong book to read. I think, you know, self-care is healthcare. So, you know, if you want to, read anything, just, you know, take care of yourselves and nourish your soul.
Well, we are going to take another quick break. We love hearing these suggestions. You're listening to Maine Calling, and we're talking about reading while you're sheltering in place. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. And Evergreen Home Performance, sending its heartfelt thanks to Maine's healthcare workers, first responders, elder care workers, and all the everyday heroes helping Maine people. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Toy Langoon was named American Mother of the Year on May 1, 1952, and was honored by a parade in New York's Chinatown. A native of Canton, China, she married Dogen Goon of Portland after arriving in the United States, and together they raised 8 children. Well known to the business community in Portland, specifically the Woodford's Corner area, Toy Len passed away in 1993 at the age of 101.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine! The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus will take place this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills is scheduled for 2 o'clock this afternoon and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We are talking with authors today. Wes McNair's new book-length poem, Dwellers in the House of the Lord. Fook Tran's new memoir is Saigon. And Lily King's new novel is Writers and Lovers. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you may be able to get a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We're joined now by Josh Christie. His bookstore is Print. Josh, have you been doing curbside there?
We are not doing curbside. We are kind of in the same boat as Longfellow and Sherman's in that we took the stay-at-home order fairly seriously and thought that encouraging people to come out and pick up books would be kind of counter to that. But we're doing free shipping on orders over $20 and shipping every day of the week.
And I've also noticed you all do a lot of readings and a lot of events at Print. Some of those have moved online now, haven't they?
Yeah, you have on your show today both our last physical event with Lily and then one of our big virtual events with Fook, which has been a real fun experience. We're lucky enough to have both my business partner, Emily, our children's manager, Stephanie, and then our events manager, Gracie, have all really leapt into planning these events, and we're drawing a national audience for events that we would, even with a big audience, would only be drawing a local people to come to. So it's been a cool thing that we will definitely continue to do virtual events or simulcast events even after things go back to normal, whenever and whatever that is.
Josh, before we say goodbye, anything you'd like to say to any of our panelists today?
Thank you all for your work. You three have done 3 of our bestsellers during this time period. And I think for me personally, at least, Wes's new book, poetry is something I've been able to latch onto in a way that I haven't with, novels or novel length nonfiction. So really having poetry has been a nice respite from the world we're in right now.
All right. Well, Josh Christie of Print Bookstore in Portland, thanks so much for calling in. I'm imagining right now all 3 of you would be on book tours if it weren't for this pandemic. Lily, how has everything changed for you?
My whole 3-month book tour got scrapped, sort of very slowly at first and then all at once. and it's just been amazing. I wanted to say to Josh and to Emily and to Ari, just thank you so, so much for your adaptability and your flexibility. And, you know, all these bookstores all across the country have had to switch to being online mail order places on a dime. And they've just been incredible in terms of how quickly they've done that and what they've done for readers. So I just feel so grateful, and also so grateful for the Zoom events that I've been having. And And a lot of my events now that were supposed to be in person are now just on the same day, but virtual. And to be honest, you know, I really, really miss the live audience. You know, you really, you get a sense of an audience and what they can, you it's like a conversation, you know, you can read them and you can say things and it, I don't know, it doesn't quite happen the same way on Zoom. At the same time, you know, I'm not in airports, I'm not in hotels, I'm not missing my family. I have dinner with my family every night. My kids are home from college. And I just come up here for an hour, 2 hours a day up to my study and do these things. And then I'm down and I have my regular life. And my whole life was going to sort of end for 3 months. And so in that way, it's kind of great. I'm certainly not the reason why is so, so awful in so many ways. And there's just so much worry and fear and concern and grief. So yeah. I don't mean to say that, you know, I want this to continue.
Fook, Josh mentioned that you all did a virtual event. What has the publicity process been like for your memoir?
It's pretty much the same thing. You know, I think in a nice way, the rule book for, you know, what a conventional, you know, book publicity and marketing campaign looks like has been blown up. And, you know, in some ways, like, I love that. Like, I really sort of flourish in the DIY, do it yourself. There are no more rules scenario. So, you know, and the book launch itself was amazing. It was like, it felt like sort of this old school digital barn raising. You know, we you know, Space Gallery was incredible. Main Writers and Publishers, you know, those two organizations and print sort of rallied. And, you know, we got so many creatives to come together. My friend Alex Scapola made like a short film for us, and Spencer Albee helped us animate this Q&A. So it ended up being this kind of weird 50-minute digital variety show, you know, with sort of players from every part of the Portland creative, you know, network. So that felt really great. And I was talking to Spencer about it, and it just felt like an opportunity for Portland, the Portland community, which is so amazing, to come together.
Yeah. And Wes, I wanted to turn to you as well. I know poetry readings are really pretty intimate usually. I suspect that doesn't happen on Zoom.
Well, yeah, I do want to talk about that. But before I forget, I want to thank my editor, Joshua Bodwell, for helping me set up virtual events, one with Longfellow Books. Thank you, Ari. And also, I want to thank Nancy at the Left Bank Bookshop in Belfast. So I've been, like the others, doing virtual things. But I have to say, speaking about the intimacy of poetry, I think of Mary Oliver's definition of poetry as intimate conversation. And I really do think that through these virtual events, I've discovered a new thing, not just a substitute, because... when I was doing mine, I was in my kitchen, speaking to somebody else, in his or her home. It couldn't be a more intimate conversation than that. And so I began to think about the staging of the public events, you know, where you have your public face and so does everybody in the audience. And there are certainly benefits to that kind of presentation. But this is something new. This is a different way of presenting poetry that more closely resembles the intimate conversation that that Mary Oliver had in mind.
Mm. We'll go to Jeremy from Cary Plantation. Hi, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I think I love to read because you can draw out all the wisdom of people who wrote, you know, recently or from thousands of years ago. And I've been enjoying Marcus Aurelius with Meditations, who, of course, was a Roman emperor during a plague and had to make all kinds of decisions. But he drew on his stoicism to control his response to what was happening in the world around him. So I just found that to be a great book to read at this time. I wanted to recommend.
Thanks for the recommendation, Jeremy. We're going to move to Susan, who's calling from Bowdoin. Hi, Susan. We're getting toward the end of the hour, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I will. Hello, Jennifer. I hope you and yours are well. And hello to Lily West and Fook. Just
Hi.
Quickly,
Hi.
I'm can't go to my library, nor can I buy books. But a shout out to my Topson Public Library and the only bookstore I buy books from, Gulf of Maine in Brunswick. Mm. I've read from my own library of 888 books. Yes, I counted them. When Things Fall Apart, Pema Chodron, and I know I'm mispronouncing her name. I'm rereading The Stand. I have the long, uncut version by Stephen King. It's just as fantastic as it always was. I reread The Princess Bride by William Goldman. What I want to read, and once I will, I'll go to the Gulf of Maine. Ironically enough, I want to buy Lily King's new book, Stephen King's new book, and Tyler's new book. And also, I've been reading Emily Dickinson because I adore her, and I went to school at the University of Massachusetts and went to her house all the time. And I guess
wow.
I guess
Susan, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. Yeah. I want to go to an email from Mike. He says, could your guests explain how they regularly find time and the mental focus to read a book? Do they schedule this time or grab random opportune moments? Lily, I'll start with you.
Oh, such a good question. I find it's difficult reading right now. And I do in a way schedule it. I try to read at night after dinner instead of watching a show. I mean, sometimes I get sucked into a show, but I do love to read and read in bed or read on the couch. And I also have been reading in the morning as well, sort of after breakfast before I start my work. I really like that alert morning time with my cup of tea to read. It's a different sort of mindset, and it can be quite creative.
What about you, Fook?
I read when I'm hiding from my children and my family and their chores to be done. I'll just run off and hide in the house somewhere and read for like 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever. No, it's really hard, especially if you're cohabitating with people and there, you know, dishes to be done and lunches to be made. So I don't have a regular, unfortunately, a regular reading schedule. So I'm reading like a raccoon eats trash out of the garbage. It's just, you know, frantic and rabid.
What about you, Wes?
I like to spread the reading through a day and through a week. If it's a novel or if it's a book of nonfiction, maybe I get this habit from poetry because poetry is normally a quicker read, and so that you can read something and mull it and go walk your dog, and maybe even occasionally commit the poem that you're reading to memory while you're doing that. So I like to mull a thing. I like to assimilate it and take my time with it. So that's my habit.
All right. An email from Anne Marie. I published a cookbook for home cooks called Modern Country Cooking on April 21st. I run a cooking school called Saltwater Farm in Lincolnville, Maine, and it seems to be a better time than ever to publish a book about home cooking. Anne Marie, thanks so much for writing in. I actually made a recipe from that book last night, and I learned something, and it was wonderful. So thank you for your cookbook. And I have been reading a little bit about publishing in this past month. The numbers are only starting to come out, but cookbooks are indeed seeing a surge right now. No surprise, as people are at home and maybe have the time to make a kind of dinner that they wouldn't if they were commuting back from work at 5 o'clock every evening. Diana Facebook, my local librarian in South Berwick, recommended All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. I couldn't put it down. Such a beautifully written book and an amazing story. And so that's going to be our last recommendation because we are almost out of time. Wes McNair, Fook Tran, Lily King, thank you so much for joining us. Lily, the author of 5 award-winning novels, her new book, Writers and Lovers, is a New York Times bestseller. Wes McNair has written 20 books. His most recent is Dwellers in the House of the Lord. And Fook Tran's new memoir is Saigon. That's S-I-G-H, gone. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from CDC Director Nirav Shah. Governor Janet Mills plans to join him as well. That is coming up on radio, television, and on our website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.